I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome back to Radio Times. It's been a bad week for FIFA, soccer's world governing body. In an early morning raid on Wednesday, seven officials were arrested in Zurich and charged with corruption. The Swiss government is looking into whether crimes were committed when FIFA named Russia and Qatar sites for the World Cup in 2018 and 2022. Later yesterday, the U.S. Justice Department charged FIFA officials and sports management company executives with racketeering, bribery, money laundering, and fraud totaling more than $150 million. FIFA President Sepp Blatter was not charged in the indictments and says he will not resign in spite of calls for him to do so. The election for president is still scheduled to go ahead tomorrow as planned. We asked Matt Apuzzo to join us. He, along with some of his colleagues at the New York Times, broke this story. And Matt Apuzzo, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
You say, and certainly listening to Loretta Lynch, this is really her first major announcement as the Attorney General of the United States, use language we normally associate with the mafia and drug cartels. What was her essential message to the public?
Well, her essential message was she was sort of laying down the marker. She's saying, we will clean up international soccer, which is quite a thing to say, considering FIFA, the governing body of soccer, has been widely seen as corrupt and shadowy for years. And so for a United States Attorney General to say, you know, with the whole world watching, you haven't cleaned up your house, we're going to clean up your house, is quite a thing to say.
I mean, what authority does, as you said, this is an international organization, what authority does the U.S. government or the U.S. Attorney General have to bring these charges?
Well, the Justice Department, I mean, federal law gives the American government the authority to bring charges against people when crimes affect or intersect with the United States. I mean, think about, we extradite people from other countries all the time to face terrorism charges. In this case, the allegations are that FIFA officials used American banks to carry out their corruption and held meetings inside the United States. So, in many ways, while it might seem counterintuitive, that's sort of been going on for years in the United States, the idea of using the long reach of the Justice Department to reach into other countries.
Was this coordinated, the Loretta Lynch's announcement yesterday and the raid in Zurich earlier in the day, was this coordinated with these Swiss authorities?
Oh, absolutely. The Swiss were acting on United States warrants. The men were indicted in the United States, and we have a treaty with the Swiss. And so the Swiss were arresting these men on warrants that were issued by the United States. So what you were seeing in Switzerland play out with this dramatic searches of FIFA headquarters and the arrest in the swanky hotel is that was basically a U.S.-directed operation. And the Swiss were acting as they're acting on our behalf.
And this announcement yesterday was the U.S. Justice Department, also the FBI, and also the IRS. So obviously coordination between American government agencies.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the IRS may be surprised at people since this isn't a straight-ahead tax case, but the IRS is where the expertise is on moving money and trying to keep assets hidden. So, yes, definitely strong coordination across agencies.
And we're talking about bribery. We're talking about racketeering, wire fraud, I believe, money laundering. I mean, it's pretty extensive charges here.
Right. And it really is language that you would normally hear for a mafia family or a drug cartel. And it, in many ways, they resembled it. We're talking about moving money, briefcases full of cash stacked in $10,000 stacks, a briefcase filled with cash. We're talking about people fixing the business decisions of FIFA. The allegations are that FIFA basically operated as a corrupt entity on many, up to its highest levels.
And some of this seemed to come from a guy who was a member of FIFA, a guy named Chuck Blazer, apparently didn't pay his taxes and got into hot water. But it seems like he had been working with the U.S. government to get some of this information. Can you fill us in on him?
Sure. So Chuck Blazer was a senior FIFA official who pleaded guilty in secret more than 2 years ago and has been cooperating with U.S. authorities at least since then. And with his help and with the help of marketing executives and media executives who also pleaded guilty in secret, those people helped the federal government build this case against other FIFA executives. Now, their testimony, their cooperation led to others, which led to others. And I think the real question now is the people who got arrested in Switzerland, what do they have to offer? Right? I mean, because if you're approaching this like a mafia case, if you're approaching this like a racketeering investigation, which it is, you're moving your way up the chain. So if I'm Sepp Blatter, the president of FIFA, and I've not been charged, I feel good about that, but I'm looking over my shoulder. I want to know, well, what are these guys going to say about me?
And was Chuck Blazer wearing a wire? I mean, is that what he was doing for the government?
We don't know. We don't know whether he, you know, we haven't seen the terms of his cooperation. He's obviously not talking to us. And, you know, I think that's one of the big questions is who else is cooperating and who else is going to cooperate?
Your story in the New York Times dealt a lot with a guy named Warner. First of all, can you tell us who he was and what some of the charges or allegations against him?
Sure. You know, so the interesting thing about the indictment and is the thing to understand is it's there's almost no one thing. It's a case where the allegations are that at every level there were crimes. If you wanted to tap into the river of prestige and money that FIFA soccer provided, you had to do business. And in this case, what you're talking about is essentially a bribe to steer the selection of the World Cup site to South Africa in 2010. And federal prosecutors are saying that was literally a $10 million deal. And it's just sort of staggering to see the level of detail. I mean, we are talking about, you know, at one point he sent his son to a hotel in Paris and said, pick up a briefcase full of cash and bring it back to me. It's those sorts of things that little details in these cases, in this indictment, that are really the most surprising thing.
I mean, sort of old fashioned, isn't it, to go pick up suitcases or envelopes of cash?
Yeah, it is. It is old fashioned, and that's it's interesting because on the one hand, it's very quaint. On the other hand, they were also using sort of sophisticated financial instruments, moving money electronically in ways that that were hard to detect. So it was both sophisticated on some levels, and then also very old fashioned.
I mean, as we know, FIFA, I mean, it's a nonprofit, but it's a very wealthy nonprofit, I guess, if I can put it that way. So what was the bribery about? I mean, what did people want for their money?
So what they wanted to do was influence the decision making of FIFA, which is the governing body of soccer. So going back to Jack Warner, who we talked about a little bit earlier, he was a member of the soccer's governing committee. It's called the Executive Committee of FIFA. And in 2004, all these countries are jockeying to host the World Cup. And one vote on the Executive Committee could mean the difference between you get the World Cup, you don't get the World Cup. And the U.S. government says that Jack Warner, who's from Trinidad and Tobago, basically shops his vote around, gets on a plane, flies to Morocco, what can you offer me? And they say, we'll offer you $1 million for your vote. Mm-hmm. And then, nope, South Africa has a better deal. And they're saying, well, we'll give $10 million for this sort of go-between company that you control. And so they're saying he cashed in his vote. He cashed in his vote for $10 million. South Africa got the World Cup, and he got paid.
As you mentioned, I mean, Sepp Blatter was not named in the indictment, and apparently this vote is going to go ahead tomorrow. What has been the response from FIFA to these allegations?
Well, FIFA's stance is that this is ultimately going to be good for soccer. And, you know, the FIFA is the FIFA, the entity, is actually a victim here, not a criminal. And that cleaning up soccer is good for the sport and it's good for FIFA and it's good for the fans. So, you know, they're saying they're supporting, they're cooperating fully with the investigation. But I think if you woke up, you know, Wednesday morning as a senior person at FIFA, it's a different world out there. You know, suddenly it's a different world.
Well, and Switzerland apparently is investigating the bids for the 2018 and the 2022 World Cups. According to at least what I read from FIFA, they're saying those are not, you know, those are not sort of, they're not going to reopen those bids. That's one of the things, I guess, that is what Switzerland is specifically looking at?
Right. So the selection of Russia and Qatar as the sites for the 2018 and 2022 World Cups have been widely seen as corrupt for years. And in fact, when the Justice Department announced it was investigating FIFA, you know, when it came out that they were investigating FIFA, we all sort of assumed it was about the selection of Russia and Qatar. But the indictment doesn't mention those. It mentions the South Africa World Cup. It mentions a host of other issues, but it doesn't mention those. Switzerland now says it's investigating the 2018 and 2022 games. So FIFA is really getting scrutinized from all angles in a way that has never happened before.
Matt, are you a soccer follower? I mean, is FIFA a new issue for you to write about?
FIFA is definitely a new issue for me to write about, but I have written a lot about drug cartels and mafia families and white-collar crime. I cover the Justice Department for the time. So in the end, it's sort of it's the same old story with a different wrapper, right? So it's international soccer, and that was the entity. And, you know, tomorrow it'll be something else.
Are there going to be more indictments? Do you know that? Do you think the Justice Department is setting up for more?
Well, they're certainly setting the expectation for more. I mean, they're saying this is the beginning, not the end. So they're certainly raising expectations of that.
We're almost out of time here. Just so our listeners understand it, and this investigation goes back something like 20 years, right, to the early 1990s?
Right. The investigating began 4 years ago, but the alleged wrongdoing goes back to the 1990s. And I think, you know, when Loretta Lynch or the FBI director talked about, that's what's most surprising to them, just that this continued for so long.
Well, on that note, Matt Apuzzo, thank you so much for joining us, getting our conversation started on Radio Times.
Happy to be here.
And that is Matt Apuzzo, New York Times reporter. We're going to take a very short break, and then we have two guests waiting in the wings. We will carry on this conversation about the FIFA arrests and allegations this week. We've got some comments coming in. You can leave a comment what you think about these charges. Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow. And just a recap here, top FIFA officials were arrested in Zurich yesterday on money laundering, racketeering, and bribery charges. The new U.S. Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, announced a 47-count indictment also yesterday against 14 FIFA officials and sports marketing executives. Allegations of corruption have surrounded FIFA for years, but can this investigation clean up soccer's governing organization? That's what we're talking about as we get two more guests in on the conversation. Tarek Panja is a Rio-based sports writer for Bloomberg News, joining us from Rio de Janeiro. And Tarek Panja, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you.
Also with us is Stephen Goff, and he writes about soccer for the Washington Post. And Stephen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
Stephen, let me begin with you. Anything that happened yesterday surprise or shock you as someone who's been covering soccer?
No.
No.
I mean, it was a long time coming. You know, there was always a cloud of impropriety with FIFA and Sepp Blatter, although Blatter wasn't directly implicated yesterday. So, you know, there was always this impression that FIFA was run this way, and there was a lot of great reporting out there over the years, including your other guest right now. And, but it, you know, it finally came to substantial light with the Justice Department and FBI.
Well, to you, Tarek, just giving you a chance to respond to what happened yesterday. And again, I guess the same question, I guess for those of us that are kind of outside soccer, seems pretty shocking. Are you shocked and surprised?
Not shocked at the detail at all. Shocked, I guess, in the States that the Swiss acted as they did on the U.S. Request to storm the, oh no, they didn't storm, they sort of walked into the hotel and asked people to accompany them. But it was quite significant, the action itself, but the details that have come out, unfortunately, don't shock me at all. I mean, this is an organization with allegations like these going back several decades. We're at an election tomorrow. Blatt is speaking right now, and as he usually does, he says, you know, it's not my fault. If these people are crooks, what am I supposed to do? I can't monitor everyone, and they're only a small minority. He made pretty much exactly the same speech 4 years ago.
And yet, Sepp Blatter, as I understand him, Tarek, has not only has he been president for a number of years now, but he really runs this organization with a tight fist. The question being, how could he not know?
It's a really good question. But what he is very clever at is, he never admits that he knows anything. What he always says, well, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the allegations that have sort of spiraled down over the years, including the indictment yesterday, the stuff in the Garcia report or other reports, Blatter is never directly fingered as doing anything, and that's his sort of slippery get-out clause. Now, obviously, another company, if it was run properly and you want to go through a reform program and introduce transparency, etc., what you would normally have is a CEO would fall on his sword and there'll be a new board, etc., but that doesn't happen here because it's a very, very small family.
A very small family. To you, Stephen Goff, and assuming some of these bribery charges turn out to be true, why then was bribery so rampant in FIFA?
Greed, you know. There's billions of dollars at stake with the World Cup and with soccer in general. I mean, it's, you know, by far the most popular sport in the world. There's a lot of money out there, and there are individuals and groups who saw an opportunity, allegedly, to claim more than their share of it. You know, I think that's at the root of it. Mm-hmm. So it goes back to one of the fundamental ills of society.
I mean, do you see it that way, Tarek, that it's essentially greed? And what's interesting to me is that FIFA is obviously a very wealthy nonprofit. It holds a World Cup every 4 years. You know, one wonders, how do you get billions of dollars doing something like that? But are we just talking about brazen greed here?
Yeah, and also you're talking about a lack of oversight, independent oversight, of you know, a small collection of people. You know, the World Cup, when you think about it, the whole world is tuning in. I think they said there was a cumulative audience of $30 billion.
Yes.
Watching this thing, and the whole world, that's a lot of eyeballs. But if you look at the organization, fewer than 500 people actually in Zurich, and it's basically FIFA structure. It's a membership organization of 209 countries all around the world. Now, I don't know I don't know who this is. I'm sure your listeners don't either. Who is the president of the Football Association of Sao Tome and Principe? Exactly, of all of these places. Now, money is distributed to all of these places around the world thanks to the World Cup. And how that's spent, very, very few people, unfortunately, know. So when it comes to days like today or tomorrow, when there's an election, you're not talking about the sponsors. You're not talking about you or I or the players or the fans who go to these stadiums. You're talking about 209 association presidents who've never had it better. They've got $1 million at least going to each federation all around the world. They're going to go and vote in an election. Why would they not like Sepp Blatter to stay for another 4 years? They don't care about the reputation of the organization, because when they go home, they have a very shiny building, probably a nice car, and they go to Zurich 4 or 5 times a year. It's a wonderful life.
Well, and are you also saying, I mean, that this money is strictly bribery to these people, or does it also go to build fields so that kids can play soccer in some of these more far-flung countries?
No, absolutely. That's what that essentially. That's what this money is supposed to do. You know, the focus initially actually for the money was to build headquarters, which perhaps is the wrong way around. Mm. Perhaps you'd be building fields first, so then you have someone to administer a football program. But FIFA had it the other way, where every national federation should have its own HQ, and a pretty nice HQ in many countries that sort of belie the real estate around them. And then it goes into the football program, pitches, etc. But more importantly as well, the structure of FIFA is that these federations get positions of authority within the FIFA structure. So FIFA has many committees, for example, with up to 15 members, be a medical committee, a player status committee, whatever. And that means you get a business class trip to Zurich. You have spending money, per diems, very nice hotel. And this, I'm sorry that it is this, but it sounds such a small-minded way of thinking about what the way football is run. But this is the structure of FIFA. They are so happy on the whole living like this, because there are very few big soccer nations with lots of money.
Well, let me go back to you, Stephen Goff, and there have been some calls for Sepp Blatter to step down or even delay tomorrow's vote, and it doesn't look like he's going to do that. And there's also someone that's challenging him. I don't know whether this is a prince from Saudi Arabia, I believe, challenging
Jordan,
to head up FIFA. Do you, based on your knowledge of FIFA and also of Sepp Blatter, do you think this vote will go ahead tomorrow in spite of all this pressure and attention?
Seems like it. Things are fluid at the moment. I guess Blatter's giving a speech now, and the European Union is strongly against him. The Asian federation seem to support him. I would imagine if the vote took place right now, he'd still win, but perhaps things are turning. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a good question. Should it be delayed? Yeah, I would imagine it should, but given what's unfolded in the last few days, but he and his followers will push forward to conduct the vote, I'm sure.
Tariq, let me go back to you and just, there are so many sponsors, and obviously that's where so much of the money comes from. If some of these big name sponsors begin to pull their names, away from the World Cup and away from FIFA, will that change things with the organization?
I guess it could, but again, we have to separate FIFA from the World Cup. Again, we talked about it, the 30 billion eyeballs, the whole world stops, even you guys in the States now really are getting into it. And think about the marketing dollars there. Now, if you think about that competition and what we've just said with all the attention, now if, say, make it up, Coca-Cola, who've been with FIFA from the very beginning, walk away, would it be would another company not so desperately want to take that product? What it could do perhaps is herald change in some way. It may push that might be the thing that the straw that breaks the camel's back. But the sponsors to this point have never done anything but pay lip service. Let me give you a little example. This one, it's just fascinating. Now, Adidas big German sportswear company, its founder basically devised the sponsorship model that FIFA has. In fact, there was a joint venture between his company and FIFA to create FIFA's marketing department. Adidas and FIFA are joined there. They've got a contract that by the end of the current one means it will be unbroken for 60 years, which is quite remarkable. Now, they released a statement in 2011, so 4 years ago, when Blatter's challenger, Mohammed bin Hammam, a very rich Qatari man, pulled out days before the election because he was alleged to have gone to Trinidad and Tobago, where there was a meeting of Caribbean officials, and envelopes stuffed with $40,000 were passed around. That news went to FIFA, and there was an investigation. Bin Hammam quit the race, saying, "You know, I can't be in a competition if this is all being alleged." It turns out this was true.
Wow.
This did happen.
Wow.
Now, so all this noise we're having now, we had all of that then without the FBI agents going to the hotel. So the media pressure forced sponsors to say something. They don't like saying things when it comes to FIFA, but they did. So Adidas said something like, "We do not like the tenor of the environment around FIFA right now. You know, we wish it would be different, blah, blah, blah." Okay. And then, fast forward 3 years, 2 days before the World Cup in Brazil started, the Sunday Times newspaper in London published this expose on how Qatar managed to secure the rights to host the 2022 World Cup, which many people obviously are still scratching their heads about. You know, how does this make sense? So they published a story saying, alleging, you know, bribery and wrongdoing, etc. So once again, a huge amount of noise. So the sponsors were forced to react again. Adidas put a statement out that was almost word for word identical to the one they released in 2011. They couldn't even be bothered to change the statement.
Wow.
Now,
wow.
You know, we're a long way away from, really big changes because of this. This is a culture of enabling in a way.
Well, let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Tariq Panja. He's a Rio-based sports writer for Bloomberg News. Also with us, Stephen Goff. He writes about soccer for the Washington Post. And we are talking about what many people around the world are talking about. And this is the fact that yesterday, top FIFA officials arrested in Zurich. Also in the United States, a 47-count indictment against 14 FIFA officials and sports marketing executives. To join the conversation, the phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I see comments coming in, Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stephen Goff, let me go back to you, and this is actually one of your colleagues at the Washington Post talked about Qatar and also talked about the numbers of migrant workers there who have frankly died building some of these stadia and I guess some of the infrastructure for the World Cup. Can you speak to that?
Well, I'm not an expert on the subject, but everything we've read from watchdog groups and independent reporting is that, you know, hundreds and even thousands of migrant workers who go to Qatar for work have died and will die, and not just for soccer, but building the infrastructure of the country. Many are held against their will and are unable to leave because of agreements with the government or with employers. So this is another angle to the scandal enveloping the Qatar bid to host the World Cup. I mean, there are, besides the corruption issues, there are human rights issues here, and this is something that certainly resonates with the world, with the public, when you hear of untold numbers of anonymous, hardworking, desperate people losing their lives to construct a stadium or a hotel.
I mean, it's absolutely tragic. Tariq, it looks like the Swiss authorities or Swiss government then are looking into both the awarding of the World Cup in Russia and also in Qatar. Do you think there's any wiggle room there? I mean, do you think there's going to be any kind of pressure to rethink those decisions if they're based on some of these corruption charges we've been talking about?
Yeah, I guess it's a case of wait and see, because yesterday people were asked this question, and they were director of communications, Walter Di Gregorio, said very categorically that the World Cup 2018 in Russia and 2022 in Qatar will go on. And then he was asked the obvious question, hang on, what if this police investigation, I mean, they raided your office half an hour before you started this press conference, what if they find that some serious malfeasance has taken place? And he would say, he only said he wouldn't speculate on this. Mm-hmm. Now, I have just this very small theory on the Swiss investigation seems to follow the report by former United States Attorney Michael Garcia, who FIFA had hired because of all the media pressure, really, to look into those votes. To investigate this, so for 2 years he went around the world and compiled a report. I think it was over 400 pages on how why the investigating the voters and the bidders, basically, and produced a report. And a summary of this was produced, published late last year, and it basically said that yeah, there may have been some wrongdoing. We found some examples, but not enough for a revote. So almost immediately after that, Garcia denounced the summary and findings, and he quit.
And he quit.
He left. Yeah.
So you know, Tariq, hold on to that thought only because we have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about the FIFA allegations and charges this week. That's Tariq Panja, a Rio-based sports writer who writes for Bloomberg News. Also with us, Stephen Goff. He writes about soccer for The Washington Post. What do you make of these allegations? 1-888-477-9499. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the FIFA corruption charges that were announced this week and what it means for the world's most popular sport. And again, our guests are Stephen Goff. He writes about soccer for The Washington Post. And we will, a little bit later on in this segment, talk about the Women's World Cup. It's going to start June 6th in Canada. Tariq Panja is staying with us for about 10 minutes or so. He's a Rio-based sports writer. And I do have some folks that want to join the conversation. But, Tariq, I want to get back to you. You were talking about this internal investigation of FIFA, some 400-page report, it comes out, and the author of the report saying that what was made public was quote-unquote incomplete and erroneous.
Absolutely. So, you know, that led to another media backlash, you know, with the pitch of it was very high. So FIFA, under pressure, said, look, what we're going to do, we're going to give this report to the public prosecutor's office in Switzerland and let them deal with it. And yesterday, what may have happened is the Swiss prosecutors, who have had that report obviously since for several months, had decided to take action. So, you know, going seizing electronic data from FIFA's HQ, some documents, and also they said bank records from banks that cooperated with them to aid that criminal investigation, they call it, into the designation of those two World Cups. Now, two things could happen. If they really find something really serious, obviously all crime is serious, but that, you know, some clear examples of payment and action, i.e. I'm going to give you money and you're going to then vote for me, that obviously means FIFA will have almost no choice but to have a revote. And FIFA has it within its powers to decide where the World Cup goes whenever it wants. Obviously there are some contracts and massive legal issues at stake there, because Qatar has got a $200 billion country reconstruction plan based around this World Cup. Russia is spending several billion dollars as well. However, you know, in a sort of more weaker sense, though, this criminal investigation could find criminal action, money laundering, or some shady behavior, which would necessitate action being taken against maybe bidders, voters, etc., but maybe not a revote because FIFA doesn't want to do with the revote. And that's what we're going to see in time, I guess.
Stephen Goff, do you see this as a possible turning point for FIFA and world soccer?
I do. Whether it just turns it into a – I don't think this is – FIFA becomes a pristine organization anytime soon or ever. But the amount of attention and the fact that law enforcement is involved certainly will affect change. You know, sponsors will put pressure on them. That counts for a lot. Although the issue with sponsors, I mean, soccer is so big, the World Cup is so big, one sponsor drops out, another one jumps right in because they understand the exposure they'll receive from the World Cup and the massive TV audience. So, yeah, FIFA could Visa could drop out. Some other financial institution could jump in with the pretense of, look, you know, we're in for the good of FIFA and for soccer, and, you know, they also reap the benefits from that approach. So I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah, let me get to – looks like a couple of callers. Tariq, before we just say goodbye to you, and then we will talk about the Women's World Cup. This is Randy from Souderton joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Randy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks, Marty. I just was thinking about this whole conversation in comparison and contrast to the American political system. And just wondering from the guests, do you think if some of the FIFA officials would be maybe as sophisticated in receiving speaking fees and things like that rather than straight-out bribes and envelopes if we'd be having the same conversation?
Tariq Panja, do you want, this sort of gets us involved in our political system here, but I guess Randy's raising the question about whether people were being smart enough. And I talked earlier in the hour with Matt Apuzzo about a guy named Chuck Blazer, who apparently didn't pay his taxes, was part of FIFA, and that sort of began this ball rolling, at least when it came to the U.S. attorney, or the attorney general now.
Yeah, Chuck's an interesting character. He pretty much is a very large man, rotund character, who's known by football administrators all around the world because he was happy to talk to a journalist and an administrator. And he basically, with Jack Warner, another guy named in the indictment from the Caribbean, pretty much picked this regional body up from being a backwater with no revenue and turned it into a sort of money-making organization. We're not talking about huge FIFA-type money or even European soccer-type money, but, you know, tens of millions of dollars that this organization bringing. He also worked out a way of skimming a lot of that money off the top for him and Jack Warner in Trinidad, who was the president. Eventually, the two fell out, in fact, over the backing of this Qatari guy at the last election. And that fallout basically created the cracks that allowed investigators to look at their books, and what they found was pretty horrific. You know, I mean, he used company funds to buy himself a Hummer, an apartment in the Bahamas, you know, all of this. So they almost wrote their own death warrant by falling out. When this pact collapsed, the IRS was actioned, and a lot of this investigation has stemmed from there. You know, there was reports that Chuck turned state witness and wore a wire and assisted this investigation. Now, looking at the indictment, it's pretty obvious. Chuck, it says, has pleaded guilty with three other people, and it's pretty obvious as you read the indictment that he is a key source for a hell of a lot of evidence that they've collated in the FBI case. Which, can I just add one little small point on that? Is we keep talking about FIFA, but not football. I think we got to separate this a little bit. FIFA is a catch-all term and a very sexy term because it is this monolith, it's Blatter, it's World Cup. But if you look at the indictment, and it's very detailed, over 160 pages, almost all of it is related to regional soccer enterprises and how to skim cash off these tournaments and media contracts in North America and South America. There is a very interesting line in there that connects to FIFA, which is about the vote for South Africa to host the 2010 World Cup, and an alleged bribe of $10 million paid for that event, which is a big deal, you know, a big story in itself. But almost the remainder, the entire remainder, is about regional football in your region and in South America, and these guys basically looting it for personal gain. Where FIFA is concerned, they also held extremely senior positions of responsibility at FIFA outside of these bodies they were running on a regional level.
And can you stay with us, Tariq? I know we squeezed another 10 minutes out of you. Your 10 minutes is up.
I
think you have to go. And
I'm afraid I'm going to have to
run. No, that's okay. I appreciate you giving us your time today. And that's
thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's Tariq Panja. He's a Rio-based sports writer for Bloomberg News. Stephen Goff staying with us for the rest of the hour. And he writes about soccer for the Washington Post. And Stephen, let me just read a comment here. I don't know if you can weigh in on this or not. This is a comment from Tony. He says FIFA is nonprofit. NFL is nonprofit. They both award, World Cup and Super Bowl. Both seem to be plagued with problems. Could they discuss the parallels between the two? Do you feel comfortable addressing that? Do you know enough about both FIFA and the NFL?
I don't. I don't follow the NFL very closely, and I'm no expert on nonprofit categorization.
Okay, fair enough. But it's interesting just to see the comments here on the screen having to do with, are there parallels between either our political system or our the way we do sports in this country and what FIFA has done? Well, let me shift gears because I would like to talk about the Women's World Cup. It starts June 6th. It's in Canada. Has this in any way been tarnished by these FIFA allegations?
I don't think so. I still think the what occurs on the field is separate from the mess that FIFA is and has been, Women's World Cup included. I mean, this is Women's World Cup is a celebration of not just women's soccer but women's athletics. I mean, this is the biggest female sporting competition in the world. You could say the Olympics, but that's obviously many sports. This has become a big deal. The Women's World Cup really started to take off in 1999, and it takes place in Canada this summer, starting next weekend. They've expanded the field. They're going to get big crowds, in part because of the Canadian proximity to the U.S. All the games are on live here and in many countries around the world, and it's kind of a refreshing event, especially at this moment when soccer and FIFA are in such a dark place in general.
Well, let me go back to something that Sip Blatter said about female soccer players, that they would have more fans if they wore tighter uniforms.
Yeah, it was
pretty appalling.
He made that comment years ago, and it's just kind of symbolic of the sexism in soccer over generations. That has begun to change. Even Blatter, for all his faults, has come out in support of the female athlete and promoting women's soccer in recent years. And, you see countries now starting to back it. I mean, for a long time, women's soccer was looked down upon because in a lot of countries, females weren't supposed to play sports, and they certainly weren't supposed to play the most popular sport, football, especially in, Latin American countries and some other places. So really the pioneers of women's soccer were countries where, that the culture, the society pushed for, female involvement in sports, places like the U.S., Canada, Sweden, Norway, Germany. There were some others too, for government reasons, like China and North Korea. But this is a movement that has progressed by leaps and bounds over the last 20 years.
There is some controversy, though, about women playing on artificial turf. Apparently, yes. The men play on natural turf or whatever it's called. Not so the women. And my understanding is that it's a little more dangerous. You can get hurt more. It's sort of, I guess, not as resilient as actual grass.
Yeah, it's a different game, actually. I mean, if you watch a soccer game on grass and a soccer game on artificial turf, it's a different mm-hmm. game because the ball moves very quickly. The bounces are different, and physically the wear and tear on the players is harder. There's been a lot of scientific research into, you know, is it more dangerous or not? I don't know if there's been a final conclusion on that, but players will tell you that they feel it for days afterward because it's just a harder surface, and the game is different. And it's absolutely sexist of what FIFA has done to play on turf. I mean, the Canadian Federation was the one that proposed turf fields. So Canada's at fault here as well, and FIFA let it go through. And even though there were complaints about it in recent years led by, star players like Abby Wambach, FIFA did not budge and left the turf in place.
So what does the U.S. team look like this year?
U.S. is one of the favorites, without question.
Really?
They haven't won the World Cup since 1999, that famous game at the Rose Bowl. They're always one of the top three teams. They've been winning Olympic gold medals, but they haven't been winning the World Cup. And things seem to be falling into place for them this year. There's just kind of a sense that this is their year. They're ranked number two in the world behind Germany. There are other major contenders like Japan, France. England's not a bad team. Brazil is loaded with talented players, just like the men's program. So the U.S. should at least get to the semifinals. If they don't get to the final, I think it's a disappointment.
Hmm.
And they're aiming to win this whole thing.
And can you watch this on TV? Who's going to be carrying it?
Yeah, Fox has the contract, and for the first time, they're going to be, I think it's 16 games on the main Fox channel, not on cable, but over the air Fox.
Wow.
In prime time, because the time difference works well with Canada. Most of the other games are on Fox Sports 1, which is Fox's main sports platform on cable and satellite, and then there's a few games on a smaller outlet. But, the games are very much available. Fox won the contract from FIFA for men's and women's World Cup, and this is their first big presentation of soccer.
Well, on that note, Stephen Goff, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
Our pleasure as well. He writes about soccer for the Washington Post, was giving us a preview of the Women's World Cup. It starts on June 6th in Canada. We spent most of the hour talking about the fact that top FIFA officials arrested in Zurich. This was yesterday. And then just a couple hours later, Loretta Lynch, the new U.S. Attorney General, announced indictments against FIFA officials and sports marketing executives. These allegations and indictments raising a whole host of questions about the world's most popular sport, and that would be soccer or football, as they say, in other countries. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook, and how to follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.